Good evening. Welcome to the Solera Report. Today is Thursday, March 1st, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join us this evening. I want to give you some heads up on events. We're working on the 2 weeks in Uluru, May 8th to 12th, and then May 13th to 17th. We are full up, but we have waiting lists, and if you're interested in getting on the waiting lists, please let us know at customerservice.com. I'll be flying back from New Zealand, where I go after Australia, and we're going to have a lunch on June 2nd in San Francisco. We don't have a location, but I want you to hold that date because we've gotten a lot of requests to please have a lunch in the San Francisco Bay Area. So June 2nd, 2018. I'm going to be doing an event for Dennis Kucinich in late March or early April. I don't have the date and the location yet, but if you're interested in participating, let me know at askcatherine@solera.com. Our theme tonight is censorship in a thousand forms. We're seeing an unprecedented pushback to try and shut up civilian discourse as well as the independent media. It's quite significant. Last Friday, I was just flying back after a fabulous 2 weeks in the Netherlands and Switzerland, and my plane was about to land, and Solera went down. I'm told by many of our subscribers that went down in the same hour that many different organizations were cut off of YouTube. One subscriber said half of his Second Amendment subscriptions on YouTube went down in the same hour. Obviously, we don't have anything of significance. Our main video site is Vimeo, and we don't have anything of significance on YouTube. We put some of the Just a Taste up, and in fact, we stopped doing that at the end of last year because we're going to move to BitChute as our secondary video provider. But we've seen over the last year Facebook and YouTube and some of the other social media channels really censoring and shutting people down. Now, I will tell you this, and I rarely talk about it. We spend approximately $100,000 a year, my estimate of expenses and overhead, dealing with significant headwinds related to this kind of competition between the corporate media and independent media. So we have cyber warfare, all sorts of hacking, extra expenses that we spend on having servers in multiple locations and making it much harder to take us down. We have serious problems with intellectual property theft, mail problems, courier problems, whisper campaigns. It's sort of not never ending, and it generates a lot of what I call shadow work, which is what makes it so expensive. Both dealing with the different particular situations, but enormous amount of time gets wasted as a team gets hiccuped again and has to work, deal with it. It's really a form of spiritual warfare, and all that is money. If you look at the money we spend on dealing with it, it's money that could have been reinvested in creating a better performance for subscribers. But as one of my friends says, you know, great businesses are people getting good at doing things, which is hard. And being successful in independent media at this time and place is very hard. It's very, very expensive to tell the truth. But it's also very gratifying to tell the truth. So we're happy to play spiritual warfare since that's what we want to be. So it just comes with the territory. It's part of doing what we do. And we think we can be really good and get really good at the hard part. But needless to say, it was very irritating to land back in the country after two fabulous weeks in Europe to find the site down. Now, we've been working for a long time on a new site, and one of the challenges of bringing up the new site is you've got half your team working on the new one and half your team working on the old one, and it's very frustrating to get split in that way. So one of the things I did is I made a command decision that rather than bring the old one back up and waste another dime trying to do that, I would rather spend the time bringing the new one up faster than expected. What it means is we're going to bring it up in two phases. One phase will be the last year of content, which we now expect to have. I was hoping to have it up by Friday, but I need more time to test the subscription software, so I anticipate having it up Monday, certainly early next week. In the meantime, we've put up last week's Solera report and then, of course, this week's Solera report tonight and, of course, money and markets. We've also made the pension fund and annual wrap-up free, and it's all over at Constitutional at constitution.solera.com under Solera reports. You can see the links to everything. And we also, if you go to solera.com, you'll see our latest update with links to everything that we have. As I said, I made the annual wrap-up available publicly. All of this is now available publicly while the subscription software is offline. So it's a great opportunity to send some of this material to your friends and family. I will tell you the reason we made the pension fund analysis from the annual wrap-up and the full annual wrap-up available publicly is I think the number one reason that we've been targeted in this censorship sweep is that the pension fund analysis in combination with a $21 trillion missing money story has the possibility of really significantly changing the narrative on the so-called pension fund crisis. And so I encourage several people to republish. It's republished up at Global Research, Michelle Chadadovsky's site, and then Jeff Rentz is republishing it. And I'm going to do Greg Hunter's USA Watchdog next week, and I'll get him to put up a link as well, because we'll be talking about the pension fund issue. So last week's interview with Bill Nyman by Harry Blaser, then Thomas Meyer tonight, and then the pension annual wrap-up all up at constitution.solera.com, the missing money website, missingmoney.solera.com, still up, all public, all available for you to send on. It's a great opportunity to introduce the Solera Report to family and friends. Some of the other people who've come down, Richie Allen literally had his entire channel wiped. Jerome Corsi now thrown off of YouTube. YouTube is now threatening two strikes against InfoWars, so maybe taking their subscriptions down. What you've seen these guys do over the last year is first they change their terms, then they demonetize. YouTube has demonetized the ads. And now you're seeing the strike system getting people to censor themselves. And again, the goal is to censor alternative media. I think the big push comes at this time because the Parkland school shooting narrative was just not holding. The ones who've gotten even dirtier have pulled the payment structure. So Rentz, several weeks ago, got PayPal pulled on him, and then he went out and got Stripe, and then just this last week, Stripe pulled it on him, so he's got to go find a new payment system. One of our donations this week was to Richie Allen to help him get back up, and you can go to Richie Allen's site and donate. It's a great thing to do at this time. We also have been donating money to the Gun Owners of America. I extended my NRA membership, all helping them finance the pushback. But as I said, I think the Parkland school shooting has completely lost control of the narrative. There is enormous pushback this time and very sophisticated pushback coming from multiple groups. It's a decentralized pushback. People angry about the drugging of children, people angry about mind control technology, angry about video games and violent movies, the governor of Kentucky gave a great interview, which we posted at Solera right before we went down. But you see a serious, serious push to suppress this kind of independent media. And the double down on the Shriekometer and the mind control is very extensive. Now, where is this coming from and why is this happening? To keep control, to keep central control of the money, you need to keep central control of the narrative. If you lose control of the narrative, you can lose control of the money. And right now, if you look at the different factions who are competing in the current situation, particularly what Cynthia McKinney calls the pilgrims and the Ziocons, and I would add the Vatican and the military as separate from those lines, right now the Ziocons have a very big problem. And particularly because if you look at the sort of group at Department of Justice and FBI, they're under tremendous pressure. I did a great interview today with John Rappaport, which we'll publish not next week, but the week following, on school shootings, including the Parkland school shooting. And we talk about school shooting in the context of controlling and losing control of the narrative. One of the things I would really stress, it's very important right now, instead of in your school district sitting around and talking about how to protect yourself from school shooting, is worth having that conversation. But I would look very, very seriously at what is happening with school budgets and with school and teacher pension funds. If you look at the Parkland school shooting, it was in the Broward County School District, which is a major business. Education is one of the biggest businesses in every county in America. The Broward County School District, which is essentially Fort Lauderdale, is the sixth largest public school system in the nation. It's the second largest in Florida. It's got almost a $3 billion annual revenue budget. It's got about $4 billion in assets with about a $1.15 billion net pension fund liability. To give you a sense of how big its budget is, it spends $113 million a year in annual food costs, $77 million in annual interest expense, because it's got about $1.6 billion of debt outstanding. So if you look at the cash flows pumping through the Broward County School District, you're talking about a major business, major, major business. And the competition to get that business is very fierce. Computers, online systems, software, books, facilities, bonding and lending, banking, that's a very big banking account. And of course, we have people all over the country competing and thinking about privatization, not to mention the pension flows. So, part of what's going on is you're trying to get school districts and teachers all worried about school shootings and not focused on who and what is playing what games with the money. And usually when you get a heavily Sciocon-related operation like this, you're talking about money and something going on in the money. The second issue, of course, is gun control. And clearly the push to get gun control is off the charts. And the pressure on President Trump to finally play ball is enormous. And he seems to be conceding some significant turf. We'll see what happens. He's talking about beefing up the Brady NICS gun control database, raising the minimum age to buy or possess a rifle, and on and on and on. So you're also seeing pressure now. The Florida teachers are trying to get their pension funds to divest of Smith & Wesson, which is the company that manufactures the AR-15. Said to be used in the school shooting. Everything related to the Parkland school shooting is as alleged. It's interesting, if you look at one of the interviews on Bloomberg describing this divestment push by the Florida teachers, they talked about the fact that after Sandy Hook, the state pension funds pressured, they had Cerebus, one of the hedge funds in their private equity firms, as one of their investor or money management firms. They had an investment in them. And they pressured them to divest of Remington. Now, the firm also owns DynCor, which was the firm that engaged in sort of significant mercenary operations and convicted twice, or their employees or firm convicted twice of sex slave trafficking. So here you have another example of the problem with socially responsible screens. They end up going after the honest companies, but they don't understand the covert operations, and so they leave the worst in place. And that's why it's very tricky to do an ES screen failure to be able to get that kind of information. And I confess, it's one of the reasons I started doing screens, which I'm doing in Solaria Investment Advisor. But it's an art, not a science, because you're talking about information which is very hard to get. And I, in my experience, I have a lot more of it than most investment advisors who are not on the inside or working with one of the intelligence agencies. But without that kind of inside information, it's an art, not a science. But if we want screens to be meaningful, if we want socially responsible investment to be meaningful, unfortunately, what is going to happen is the teachers are going to end up helping the bad guys if they do this. So it's a very tricky subject. All of this is going to make the 2018 campaign very interesting because you're seeing a real pressure with 1,000 forms of censorship to really step down and step on the truth. And there doesn't seem to be any creativity in the strategy. It's just more force, more mind control, more double down. And of course, the more they do that, the sloppier they become. One of the defining characteristics of the Parkland operation and the effort to sort of control the narrative around it is that it's been unusually sloppy, just like the Las Vegas operation. And so that's pretty disturbing. But again, a lot of dependency on their ability through force and mind control to keep the truth down. It's not working. It's not going to work. And you're going to see independent media come back even stronger from this. Because every time this happens, you get the 5 to 10% of the citizenry who is very responsible, very experienced, very knowledgeable, and willing to take action, looking at what's going on and saying, you know, doesn't make sense. Money and markets. The markets are trying very hard not to be spooked about three things. One is rising interest rates. Two is the military budget and the resulting deficits. And three is inflation. We're seeing interest rates rising and inflation peaking its head up and across the board in many different kinds of commodities and budgets. The reality is if interest rates, if the increases are gradual, it shouldn't tank the stock market. If it runs up too much, if we get more than 150 basis points in 1 year, you're going to start to see some real spooking in the equity markets. It's funny, I just talked to one broker today and realized you could get a 13-month CD at 2.1%. And I was like, that's looking attractive enough not to do stocks. Now, you know, to really attract money out of the equity markets, you're going to have to get a higher yield. But I've always said, as soon as you can buy, you know, as soon as you can get 5% on a 10-year municipal, watch the money suck out of the equity markets anyway. But my expectation is that the Fed and the central banks will do a reasonably decent job, along with global demographics, of keeping the interest rate hikes in that 150 basis point per year area. So I see why everyone's spooked, but I think the scenario chance that they lose control of that is still small. Military budgets, that's pounding, but you know, I don't think it's a 2018 problem when the markets really fall apart because of it. Inflation is a real problem. If you look at what the official statistics say inflation are, every indication I see is it's running much higher. So yes, the economy is growing, and in the United States, wage and employment is growing. But if you look at income and wage growth, it's nowhere matching inflation. So the slow burn squeeze continues. U.S. dollar index, U.S. dollar has strengthened a little bit, so it's down 1.39% for the year. It's trading in the 90-91 area. We may get back over 92, and so it may turn out we're not going to break the line. Let's see. The long treasury gotten hammered this year. It's down 6.2% for the year. That gives up most of the gains, not all, that it had last year. The intermediate treasury ETF is now down 3% for the year. That means it's wiped out all the gains it had last year. Bond aggregate down 2.12% and junk down almost 1% for the year. So fixed income off, if anything, it's bouncing a little bit, so I expect it to strengthen. And again, if you get really attractive yields in the relatively short area, like a 2.1% on a 13-month bank FDIC CD, you know, you're talking about starting to attract money back into fixed incomes. But I think it's going to be hard for anybody to go into the longer area because they expect rates to continue to rise. S&P now up 1.79%. We had a bit of a shock in the market today when Trump came out for very drastic steel tariffs against China. It really tanked the market. Dow dropping almost 500 points. It closed down about 420. So down almost 2% today. Home builders now down 8.4% for the year, but all indications are the market, housing price in the strong markets is rising smartly. So I wouldn't surprise me to see the home builders come out this year. VGK, the European ETF, down almost 1%. Germany down almost 2%. Developed markets minus North America flat for the year. China's still strong. It's up 2.27%. And the small cap, that's large cap, small caps up 1.76%. Emerging markets up 1.91%. So China leading the way, part of that being a weaker dollar. The commodity index flat for the year. Gold back down. It's up 1% for the year. And silver is now down 3.31%. Oil not as strong as it was. It's up 3.82%. The big question on everybody's mind as they look as the market, and you can tell the market's really volatile and jumpy, is have we gotten our correction? Is the correction over? If you look at the charts, it certainly looks like it's over. I'm a skeptic. I'm very nervous about the market. I think we're still a reasonable chance of a meaningful correction, and so I'm not eager to, especially at these high valuations in the U.S. market, I'm not eager to be to take on more right now. But so we have to see what has happened. We've certainly had a wild ride up and down, and now starting to go back up again. But I clearly think we're in a long-term bull, and I think it's far from over. But my correction for the first half of this year is, are we going to get a correction? We're just going to have to see. No way to know. Putin is heading into the presidential election in Russia on March 18th. We have several elections coming up in March. The first ones in the first week, the Italian elections, which are very interesting. And then Russia on March 18th, no real contest there. Putin is expected to win by a very large majority. But Putin today gave a presidential address to the Federal Assembly, which was interesting for two reasons. That it went through many different areas of life in Russia and the economy, talking about what their goals were and how important it is that they not fall behind. The final section of the speech was on national security, and it's making waves around the world. And it's certainly worth studying. You can read the full text. Both, I put the full text of the national security section in my notes to this Money and Market. You can also read it at the there's a website on the Russian government, the section for the Office of the President. You can read the full text there. But if you go to Saker's website, he's got an initial assessment, both his own as well as from a naval analyst, and essentially their assessment of Putin's announcements of Russia's new weapons. Ever since the sanctions went on, they've been working very aggressively on developing their weapons. Saker's initial assessment is that there is no longer a U.S. military option against Russia. There is no way the U.S. can engage in a first strike against Russia and come out the winner. And so now the U.S. response is Russia is in violation of the treaties, which I think is unlikely from what I know of them. Another response is that Putin is bluffing. I doubt it. If you look at how Putin has operated on the world stage for many years, and it's not his nature to bluff in this way about these things. And so it's a This is a very this was a very aggressive speech, and I would encourage you to take a look at what was in the notes. One of the things he goes into is the extent to which the United States has broken its commitments. Let me read you some of the sections, and again, this is in the notes to this Money and Markets. Now, this is Putin's the translated text from Putin's address. Basically, this position, this logic, judging from the realities of that period, is understandable, and we are ourselves to blame. All these years, the entire 15 years since the withdrawal of the United States from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, we've consistently tried to re-engage the American side in serious discussions, in reaching agreements in the sphere of strategic stability. We managed to accomplish some of these goals. In 2010, Russia and the United States signed the New START Treaty, containing measures for the further reduction and limitation of strategic offensive arms. However, in light of the plans to build a global anti-ballistic missile system, which are still being carried out today, all agreements signed within the framework of New START are now gradually being devaluated, because while the number of carriers and weapons is being reduced, one of the parties, namely the United States, is permitting constant uncontrolled growth of the number of anti-ballistic missiles, improving their quality and creating new missile launching areas. If we do not do something eventually, this will result in the complete devaluation of Russia's nuclear potential, meaning that all of our missiles could simply be intercepted. Despite our numerous protests and pleas, the American machine has been set into motion. The conveyor belt is moving forward. There are new missile defense systems installed in Alaska and California as a result of NATO's expansion to the east. Two missile defense areas were created in Western Europe. One has already been created in Romania, while the deployment of the system in Poland is now almost complete. Their range will keep increasing. New launching areas are to be created in Japan and South Korea. The U.S. Global Missile Defense System also includes 5 cruisers and 30 destroyers, which, as far as we know, have been deployed to regions in close proximity to Russia's borders. I'm not exaggerating in the least, and this work proceeds apace. So what have we done apart from protesting and warning? How will Russia respond to this challenge? This is how. And then he proceeds to describe and show videos of all the different weaponry. And again, it depends on, I'm not sufficiently expert to assess the impact of this. But as I said, what Saker and the analysts believe is this is a very aggressive response to creating the defensive capability to protect themselves from what we all believe was the American effort to create a first strike nuclear capacity. So this is a very important development. I would encourage you to read the presentation in the notes. Again, I think the notion that Putin is bluffing is, I find it highly unlikely. While Putin is announcing the upgrades to the Russian arsenals, Xi Jinping is working with the party to essentially remove term limits on his leadership. And what he is essentially doing, if all goes well in the two-week session, is he's going to get a parliamentary rubber stamp on essentially his term changing to one indefinite. And what that means is we're going to have Putin for 6 years and Xi Jinping for an indefinite period of time. That creates very stable leadership in both of these countries, while in the United States, the political leadership at the top is very insecure and fluid. Now, why is this important? Russia and China, if you listen to the annual wrap-up, are creating a very powerful financial partnership to basically working in leadership with the BRICS, provides significant and very serious financial liquidity and alternatives relative to the United States and the Western payment systems. So we're looking at a serious competition between the United States and Russia and China. Russia now, if they're correct in their assessment, or Putin is correct in his assessment, that they have tremendously enhanced their defensive position against American hegemony, and and then have that capacity in partnership with China, you're talking about extreme pressure on the U.S. leadership and vision, particularly when the U.S. brand has never been so low around the world. I will tell you that being in Europe for 2 weeks, it was embarrassing to be an American, as the headlines were full of Robert Mueller's next action. While I was in the Netherlands, he brought the indictment against the Russian social media firm and propaganda activities. One of my favorite quotes came from one of the editorial writers, Holman Jenkins, in the Wall Street Journal. He said, "Let's be realistic. The Russian propaganda activities detailed in Robert Mueller's indictment last week had less impact on the election than 20 seconds of cable TV coverage. Pick a channel of any of Mr. Trump's rallies." It's pretty funny. But you read the indictment, and what you realized is he has essentially nothing. But he's bringing it because then you can say, oh, well, the Russians did it. But he will never have to go to trial because these folks will never be extradited. And so he knows he's never going to have to put forward any evidence. And if you look at the particulars of the people that he brought the indictment against and what they did, he doesn't even have enough of a case. If you look at the indictment, it's not even implying that they had any influence on the election. But creating this indictment, of course, works for the spinmeisters. And the game of the Russians did it, which looks even worse if you look. We have more information coming out on the Seth Rich murder. I just sent into the website, it'll be up as soon as the site goes up, a new article by Admiral Lyons in the Washington Times on the unanswered questions of the Seth Rich murder. So the United States, in all of this, looks so ridiculous. Of course, they've also issued new indictments on Paul Manafort for things that started years before the election. So the whole thing, to anybody who knows anything about litigation or enforcement or interfering with the elections, is that the whole thing just looks like a joke. And of course, this is a time, if you look at what's going on with Russia and China, for the United States to have a serious brand. But that's not what we're projecting. To make matters worse, someone sent me a memo, an article from the University of Iowa. You just can't make this stuff up. The article was from the Des Moines Register. Let me just read this to you. Essentially, what it says is the Russians are meddling in our food systems because they're promoting the idea that GMOs are bad. I sent it to somebody and they wrote back and said, oh, great. Now, if I'm opposed to GMOs, I'm a communist sympathizer. But if you read this issuance from the Board on Agricultural Assembly, and then you read the article from the Des Moines Register, you literally have a group of academics at the University of Iowa taking the position that because the Russians are marketing their food as non-GMO, that they are meddling in our food systems. Now, given what we've done to agriculture, to Russian agriculture, with the sanctions and the meddling that we've been guilty of, and which in fact triggered this whole anti-GMO push by the Russians, you can't make up this level of hubris. It's quite remarkable. The one piece of good news from the Trump administration, apparently they are considering allowing students to file for bankruptcy to clear their student loans. We have now unprecedented levels of student loans which are behind payment or headed into default. This is a very smart election move, and I hope it happens. Certainly, if you look at the president, he's filed for bankruptcy enough. he would not be president of the United States if he hadn't been allowed to extinguish a great deal of debt in bankruptcy. Vice President Pence is proceeding with a private space initiative. They've put together an advisory board of everybody in the national security state who's licking their chops over more government money for space. And now they've come out with an initiative where they're now collecting up and trying to create all the regulatory initiatives or legal initiatives they need to pull and attract lots of capital into space. I'm going to be talking more about that in our first quarter wrap-up, which is going to be on the space-based economy. South Africa, I've been watching what's going on in South Africa now and just had an associate who was down there for 2 weeks. They wrote me, I wanted to read it to you, they wrote me while the Munich Security Conference was going on last week. I found it interesting that the resignation of Jacob Zuma, the death of the opposition leader of Zimbabwe, and the resignation of the president of Ethiopia all occurred within 24 hours and within the time period of the Munich Security Conference that took place last week. Even though the whole country of South Africa prayed for Zuma's resignation, he gave no indication he would step down anytime soon. And then all of a sudden, even one of the Guptas was arrested that night. It is so unreal this could happen that the Guptas would not have been protected by some kind of deal or agreement. So it looks to me that someone higher up had made the decision, and possibly at the Munich Security Conference. I agree. I think that's very likely. Zuma apparently received lots of money from Russia, promising them to have them build nuclear power plants in exchange for the Russians having a military station here in South Africa. I guess he owes them something if that is not happening now. Anyway, something is definitely going on in South Africa. One of the interviews that I just sent in to post at in News Trends and Stories when the site goes live is videos about white farmers being slaughtered and the land stolen. There is an enormous crisis underway. You still have a fair amount of very significant white farmers, and they're being systematically killed and their land stolen. Whenever you have lawlessness of that extent, it kills an economy. And so South Africa, you know, if that kind of lawlessness continues to be unleashed, is going to be in real trouble. Now, given the changes to the Zuma leadership, we'll see what happens. If you watch the movie Hotel Rwanda, what you'll understand is that these, you know, violence in an Africa country, the day that the guys at the top decide it should stop, it stops. J.P. Morgan used to be, and I assume still is, the correspondent banker for South Africa. There's no way this can continue if the bankers want it to stop. So the question I have is, what's the plan? Why is South Africa being collapsed or allowed to collapse? Is it so somebody can end up controlling that land? The farmland in South Africa is exceptionally valuable. And as there is more and more effort to go into Africa and accumulate farmland, that land is very attractive. So I'm going to be keeping an eye on South Africa, because this could turn, I mean, it's very ugly now, it could turn very significantly uglier. And it's proof positive that white people can be genocided. Our hero this week is the Solari team. We have a very tiny but wonderful team. We're outstanding at spiritual warfare. Every member of our team is a great person. A lot of talent, a lot of capability. One of the rules we have is families first. And what's interesting is the people who work for Solari, many of them have major responsibilities taking care of members of their family. And it's remarkable to see intelligent, talented people who are dealing with serious issues in terms of responsibility for kids or parents or people in their family in trouble. You know, so they're dealing with really serious issues. And in the meantime, when you deal with the kind of cyber hacking and warfare and other problems we have, you're dealing with a level of extreme childishness. That's the nature of warring with the Ziocons. They can be extremely childish, and they love to do very childish things to you. And when you have to deal with that childishness and it takes time and money away from doing things that are really important, it takes a remarkable amount of courage and fearlessness to deal with it. Anyway, but they do it because they love helping people, and they love helping the subscribers, and they enjoy intelligence. They want to live free and inspired lives. They love being part of something that's trying to help other people do the same. But my hat is really off to them, because when I said we're not going to bring up the old site, we're just going to bring up the new site, it's like letting go of a trapeze and you know, leaping into the unknown to grab, on the theory that you can grab the trapeze, which we will. I know we will. But they're a great team. I'm really proud of them. And it reminds me of my great line from Josie Wales. I rode with them and I got no complaints. We had no movies this week, so there's no Let's Go to the Movies. We did the interview with Thomas Meyer, also in video form, which we'll post on Friday. So we have two videos, and I'm going to post the outtakes. So for me, that's enough videos for 1 week. And it was a great discussion, a great interview, and I hope you enjoy it. As I said, we've posted two interviews on constitution.celeri.com. The first one is prior week interview, Bill Nyman and Harry Blaser. It's fascinating. Bill Nyman is really the food revolutionary who led the whole development of the grass-fed movement. He knows more about ranching and raising great beef and great meat than any human being on the planet, in my opinion. And I've had the opportunity through Harry to spend some time with meet him and his wife, who's a animal activist, and just he's a remarkable person. And one of the things that you hear in this interview is the challenge for him of being able to market grass-fed beef done properly economically, is there's so many people who are lying about the quality of their meat. And it's interesting, one of his ways of coping with that is he's been working with a scientist to create a testing tool. They're about to come to market that will easily tell a small business or a butcher, you know, whether the meat is the quality. So the grocers can really determine whether the quality is what they're being sold. It's very clever. So I'm looking forward to it. So the first interview is Bill Nyman and Harry Blaser. And then what we put up today is my interview with Thomas Meyer. Thomas is the publisher of The Present Age. He's joined me twice on the Celeri Report last summer for a discussion of how to confront evil. And the year before, I interviewed him when I was in Zurich to introduce us to Rudolf Steiner. I find Thomas to be one of the most inspiring people I get to talk about. And our topic was the future of Europe, but what we kept coming to and back to again and again, and I use that as our excerpt for the Just a Taste, is the importance of building global networks of people who both understand reality and have a spiritual commitment to provide the leadership necessary to nurture Western culture and values during this transition that we're in. And he, of course, had many ideas and recommendations on that subject, so I recommend it to you. Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. I just listened again to your discussion with Jason while in San Diego. I wonder if the portable lab you mentioned would be able to tell you through its testing what effects you have been or are getting from the use of the Blue Shield and the QRS. It was a great discussion, and I will probably listen to many times more. I was also impressed with Harry Blaser's interview with Don Huber. Thank you so much for all the helpful, healthful information. I don't, you know, I do carry something to measure EMF. It's not something I can use to test the effects on me of the Blue Shield and the QRS. I assess those from my experience of using them. So I'm convinced that they both help. Catherine, after a long hiatus, it's good to be back in the Celeri family. I'm a recent resubscriber. I've missed the unique and in-depth review of money and markets, politics, and everything in between, including the amazing lineup of interesting and thought-provoking guests. I'm excited for this week's interview with Bill Nyman. I will never forget your exhortation from years ago. If you don't know your farmer, you shouldn't eat it. Living in the heart of Montana's best beef and lamb country, there's much easier to do than when I previously lived in Texas. And then he goes on to describe a very interesting two natural beef producers. It's I don't know how to pronounce it. It's INDRE, Indra Land Ranch, and Crazy Peak, Montana Premium Beef. The links will be in the notes. And he recommends someone for the to be a guest. So I really appreciate these links. They look terrific. I'll take a look. And if you're ever near traveling through Sweetgrass County, Montana, Big Timber, please give me a call and I'll arrange a range tour for you. It sounds very good. I'd be very interested in doing that. As you know, I love Montana. Dear Catherine, thank you for the many enlightening posts on your website. You've helped me appreciate beauty and culture ever more deeply, but I'm still grappling with how to interact and respond to my local circle, especially folks at my church who are now jumping onto the anti-gun bandwagon with ever more fervor, if that's possible, than they had in opposing Trump's election and subsequent presidency. They buy the mainstream story about the recent school shooting of the lone troubled gunman and see the solution as banning guns. I don't want to argue with good people and their good intentions. It seems like arguing will get us nowhere but into a state of chaos. Last time I asked you a question along these lines, you said that transparency would help. Please share your thoughts or views on how we can bring positive energy to such a challenging situation, especially in our own personal circles. Again, thank you so much for all you can do to help your subscribers and make your world a better place. I really believe the first thing you can do for everybody in the church is to simply pray for them. Just pray that the truth be revealed. I really believe in a situation like this that prayers work. In our prayer books, you will find the Deer's Cry prayer at the end, and the Deer's Cry prayer is something I pray at least 5 to 10 times a week. And I find it's unbelievably helpful in situations like this. What you have to do with folks like this, there's no point in sort of fighting with them and getting into opposition. But what I find is sometimes if you wait, and especially if you're praying for people, that they may at some point ask you truthfully what you believe, and then you need to respond truthfully, but do it with an incredible spirit of calm and not be vested in the result of what you say, or in other words, not project any emotional need to persuade them of anything. If you can get them to be willing to watch a video or a DVD, this is a situation where Richard Dolan's new series at Gaia TV on false flags would be very, very helpful. And you can arrange a showing with a potluck dinner. Now, it's a series of 11 videos, so it's a lot. And maybe you can just show them a few. But I find no matter what the topic, there is one or two good DVDs. One I strongly recommend when it's ready is Truth Stream is coming out with a DVD about the history of mind control. And the biggest problem you have with the people in your church is they're ingesting a huge amount of entrainment and subliminal programming. Feel free to print out the transcript on my interview with Adam Trombley on entrainment and subliminal programming, or any of our reviews on the use of that stuff to get people hooked on gambling or pornography or anything else. And if you can get them to read and talk about it, maybe do a potluck dinner. That would be good. They need to know. And what I've found is sometimes if I'm telling people, because I'm sincerely concerned about the fact that they're getting tricked, and it doesn't matter what the topic is, whether it's tricked over school shooting or tricked over vaccines or, you know, whatever, but just beginning to understand that they're ingesting a huge amount of mind control technology and they're being manipulated could be helpful. But again, you really need an opening where they ask you for your opinion. And I think it's extremely important when you give it that you answer truthfully, but you not be vested in persuading them of your point of view. You just share it. And I think the most important thing is not to teach them the truth of school shooting. It's to teach them the truth of how their minds and spirits are being manipulated. Anyway, what I look for is try to find ways of giving other people energy in a manner that gives me energy. So it's a matter of coming to a place where you respect you respect their desire to know from you what they want to know, as opposed to what you think they need to know. It's really a matter of respecting somebody else's position. And it's hard to do when mind control is operating, which I think it clearly is with the church that you're in. Next question. Are you familiar with World Affairs Brief? Yes, I am familiar with World Affairs Brief. I've read one of the books by the proprietor at one point. I don't have an opinion just because I'm not current. It's not a website that I use. But I've certainly never... I don't have any big red flags. I just haven't found the material as useful as other sites that I use. Someone sent a video by a couple of targeted individuals talking about some of the financial corruption they had run into, which was very interesting. And their question was, I believe this is important. Could this be the local bridge to the missing $21 trillion, a game changer? It's a part of it, but there's an enormous number of different kinds of financial fraud and this. So, yeah, is this a part of it? Yes. But I don't think it's a game changer. The challenge of dealing with $21 trillion is you're dealing with a flow of money that really touches almost everything. Okay, let's see. I would really encourage you, again, we made the pension fund article public, and I would really encourage you to read it. It's at pension.solari.com, which is the web presentation for the annual wrap-up. And one of the things you will finally understand is why I've been beating the drum about the money going missing from HUD and DOD, because ultimately what this is going to come down to is, are we going to abrogate our obligations to retirees or not? And that $21 trillion is very much a part of that play. So, again, really check out the pension fund article at pension.solari.com. Catherine, I recall listening to one of your videos about missing trillions. In it, you described the existence of two groups of globalists, the Pilgrims and the Zyokons. With the Satanist Zyokons being exposed and forced to resign, do you think that the Pilgrims are alive and well and avoiding the spotlight? Well, first of all, the Zyokons are... I assure you, whoever's had to resign is a small handful of those who are in power and rocking and rolling. Also, on February 2nd, you tweeted the following: this week on Money and Markets, forget the memo, get the real story. Congress authorizing no warrant surveillance, failure to comply with black budget to cover up $21 trillion missing and $1.5 trillion for nuclear weapons. Fascism won big in January. Do you think there is a possibility that Trump is a pilgrim and that we, the few people that care about the Constitution, are being flanked by the pilgrims while we are distracted waiting for all the pedophilia Satanists to be arrested? I'm not sure I understand your question, but here's what I will say. The pilgrims are remarkably not to be seen or found. And if anything, they're letting the Zyokons run around and do a great deal of damage. The question is why. I think we are, when I listen to people who, coming out of the Trump campaign, are sitting around waiting for pedophiles to be arrested, I think that is a distraction. You need to judge events according to what really happens, not according to lots of covert gossip about what's going to happen. I think that's hope porn. And I see very little hard evidence that pedophilia is being dealt with in a very significant way. Now, there's no doubt that there's a certain amount of effort to cut out some of the lower levels. And the thing that's very positive about what Trump has done is he has provided a great deal of sort of verbiage about how he wants all this stuff to stop. And that has been very encouraging for state and local enforcement to do what they can. So I think it's making a difference. The reality is, if you're going to make real headway, you've got tremendous online operations, including pornography. And you're going to have to cut all of that out. Unfortunately, one of my suspicions is that's very much entwined with the FBI and not in a good way. And that's part of the mess that we're seeing at the FBI, or it may be in the mix, but more on that at another time. Another interesting comment on the sort of military versus sciocon, I've talked repeatedly about the fact that I think the generals or the military line that got Trump elected wants to make sure that the sciocons don't get their war. I think they're sick of the what the sciocons have gotten America to do in the Middle East in terms of cost to the U.S. budget, cost to the Middle East, cost to the American taxpayer. And I think there's a real effort now by the generals to stop the Israelis getting us into a war with Iran. And it's interesting to see General Kelly essentially arranging to pull Jared Kushner's security clearance this week. I also think it's the American generals, one way or another, who are behind the police recommending indictment of Netanyahu. There's more developments there with some of his old colleagues apparently testifying against him. Whether or not they move forward with an indictment is yet to be seen, but whether it's the efforts to basically pin Netanyahu's wings or to deny Kushner access to certain information, I find it a very interesting development and one that says someone with an, is trying to assert adult supervision here, but it looks to me like the pilgrims are in the background, and right now we're seeing the military versus the sciocons, and the military has had enough of their time and money being wasted. Next question. Hi, Catherine. I'm honored to be able to contact you. Below is a direct quote from Seth. It reveals why the Cabal are so intent on keeping us convinced war, disaster, and doom are a reality. It also reveals how we neutralize their program, concentrate only on the positive and constructive and helpful, and never on the opposite. Stay strong, we need you. I'm not a big fan of channeled material. Sometimes I'll read it, like The Course in Miracles, but I never know how much of this stuff is coming from Langley, Virginia, since they do have the technology to get, sort of people to channel stuff like this. I do believe in the power of intention, faith, and thoughts. If you haven't listened to our interview with Bill Tiller and Lynn McTaggart, I would really encourage you to do so. But I also think it's very important that we be willing to deal with reality as it is and not go off in a. I believe in being positive, but I also think that is where being positive can get you to ignore what's going on and not to assert adult supervision. The final question, someone sent me a really beautiful link to an interview on a spiritual project whereby they were collecting Denver University spiritual project choir was collecting slave era songs and really something very remarkable. So that is up on the website. It's very beautiful. Thank you. Well, that's it for this week. It's fun to be back in the United States. Despite the censorship moves, it's great to be back. It was wonderful to be in the Netherlands and Switzerland. It's also wonderful to be back. For the next 2 weeks, we're diving into the nuts and bolts of power and the engineering of power. Next week, reforming our voting systems with Dr. Laura Presley, a fabulous engineer and successful business professional who decided to run for city council in Austin, Texas, and now is learning a lot about how voting systems are rigged and what we need to do about it. It was strongly recommended by a number of subscribers that we get her on, and so that was a great interview. We look forward to publishing it next week. And then March 15th, the next week, the lies and damn lies of school shootings with John Rappaport, where we connect the dots between trying to control the narrative so you can try and control the money and what that has to do with the corporate media going crazy on Parkland school shootings and trying to shut down the independent media so that they can promote their lies and damn lies. Anyways, great conversation with John Rappaport, and we'll follow it up. That'll be the March 15th, the Ides of March, a perfect conversation. So until next week with Dr. Laura Presley, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.